Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor. It's a beautiful day.
Bono and U2, they were supposed to be doing a concert in Paris this weekend. They obviously have canceled. As have Dave Grohl and Foo Fighters. They were supposed to be doing a concert in Paris. They have canceled. Natalie Portman was supposed to have a premiere of her new movie in Paris, canceled. Lots of things like that. We'll talk more about some of the related things as they as it relates to the terrorism in Paris. Actually, we're going to preempt our far-flung forecast for this week also. And we'll get back to that next week for sure, because we want to get to our next guest who brings some incredible insight into tragic events like this. Professor Tom Mikaitis is a history professor at DePaul University and just is one of the most knowledgeable people that there is when it comes to these subjects. Tom, thank you for joining us. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you've had a couple of days to, you know, ruminate on all of this. What, you know, it's just some general thoughts. about what happened on Friday night.
Well, you know, it's truly a horrific event, and it comes at the end of two very difficult weeks with the downing of the Russian airliner, the bombings in Beirut, and now this catastrophic attack. On the other hand, if there is a silver lining here, I think in some ways these attacks may be a sign of a weakening organization rather than a strengthening one, because they're a direct response to growing pressure being brought to bear on the Islamic State in its heartland. You know, what lost in all of this discussion is the fact that the Kurds took a major town in northern Iraq. The U.S. helped them do that, disrupting supply routes into Mosul. And we took out the English voice of ISIS, the infamous Jihadi John. Now, his death won't weaken the organization, but it says we're getting pretty precise intelligence on these guys. So, you know, it's like a boa constrictor squeezing its prey. And that as that's happening, look at its targeting. It's deliberately trying to intimidate the people that are putting the most pressure. French stepped up their attacks beginning in January after Charlie Hebdo, but again in September, just hit an oil refinery that is controlled by ISIS last week. And, you know, the Hezbollah, people don't realize this, Shia Hezbollah in Lebanon has been going over the border fighting ISIS on the ground. So these attacks are not, you know, can have to be interpreted in the context of the war in the Middle East itself.
So some of the criticism that we've been hearing, mostly from political opponents of President Obama, saying that it was his policies that caused this, it sounds like what I'm hearing you say is the policies that the U.S. government has right now, the tactics that we and our allies are using against ISIS right now are kind of effective.
Yeah, I think in some degree they are. Now, of course, the difficulty is, the downside of that is, you know, to be quite honest, we're entering a dangerous period. You know, I'm going through the list of people who are of nations that are really going after ISIS pretty aggressively that have not been hit by terrorists, by an ISIS, major ISIS attack, and it's us and the British. So that causes me some real worry that we may be entering a dangerous period in terms of terrorism. But it's also, to me, indicative that what we're doing in the Middle East is working. The problem is it going to work quickly enough to achieve the results that people who are, you know, facing these kinds of devastating attacks are going to want? I think you're going to see the French unleash some terrible retribution for this. I think they're going to, and the Russians as well. You know, they produced a video, ISIS produced a video threatening attacks in Russia this week, and whatever else one says about Vladimir Putin, he's not easily intimidated. So I think, ironically, these groups that have been sort of coordinating activities are going to actually probably cooperate a bit more, and that's only going to increase that pressure on ISIS.
I think what a lot of people are so concerned about is the nature of these terrorist attacks in nightclubs, in places, you know, terrorist attacks like we've never seen before. and specifically on innocent civilians.
Actually, we have seen them, and this is what is so frustrating to me, because I've been saying this since the Mumbai attacks of 2008, that some time ago a Chicago network asked me to rank the most likely targets in Chicago. I didn't list a single building. I talked about venues, events. I've been worried about this for a long time. I said after the Boston Marathon bombings, we were really lucky that all they used were these rather ineffective, lethal, yes, but very few people died. If they'd gone in with small automatic weapons, they would have killed far more people before they were neutralized. It's extremely difficult because they're going for these high-value, soft targets. And, you know, major metropolitan areas in free, open, democratic societies are target-rich environments. There is not a great deal that you can do against them. And, you know, this they have built up a network. And this is the thing. ISIS is a multidimensional phenomenon. It's an ideological movement. It's a quasi-state. It controls territory. It taxes. It governs all these things. And it's linked to an international terrorist network that we see as, you know, quite effective. This attack in Paris was obviously weeks, if not months, in the planning.
There's been so much talk on the internet, particularly yesterday. I noticed it really ramped up with people talking about, what about the ISIS attack in Beirut?
Yes.
What about the ISIS attack in Kenya? You know, which went with virtually no talk at all, and certainly
ISIS, the attack in Kenya was not ISIS. That was Al Shabaab. That was Al Shabaab out of Somalia. But again, the pattern is the same. Why is Al Shabaab attacking the Westgate Mall in Kenya and a college campus in Kenya? Because the Kenyan military went into Somalia, took the port of Kismayu, and brought pressure to bear. This is the nature of the threat we face. As you attack these organizations in their heartland, they tend to lash out and try to hit you at home in the hopes that it will change public opinion in a way that will get you to take more dramatic action.
So,
that will get you to back off the action you're taking.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's definitely had an effect, isn't it? Even though you started off with some very factual evidence about strides that we've made against them, it's got people. The terrorism worked.
It does work though. I mean, that's the whole point. I mean, do you hear anything other than grim resolve coming out of the French government and the French people? I don't. I think, you know, there are going to be some very negative consequences we can talk about in terms of the refugee crisis, but I fully expect them to take action. Now, there's a lot of discussion of a ground invasion. That's not the only option. You can do a series of, you know, airborne assaults and interventions and so on to just keep pummeling this organization. You don't necessarily have to go in and try to occupy and clean out all of its territory, because then you get into the Iraqi phenomenon of you break it, you bought it. And, you know, quite honestly, people don't realize that in ISIS has a theology. You know, it's simplistic to just call it bad Islam. You know, it's atavistic. It throws back to the early days and even distorts that. But this notion of, they have their own version of an Armageddon. They would like, in some ways, to have an American occupation force that they could actually hit there. So, you know, it's easy to say, you know, let's go in and do this. But it's also important to remember that over the past two years, really since we pulled out of Iraq, American public opinion has not been in favor of a major ground action in the Middle East.
Let me take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about the subject of Syrian refugees.
Mm-hmm.
Something that all the political candidates are talking about right now, whether we should rethink that. Tom Mikaitis, terrorism expert, DePaul University history professor, on the line with us. If you'd like to chime in as well, to call or text 312-981-7200, WGN. Professor Tom Mikaitis on the line with us today, terrorism expert, DePaul University. And Tom, before we continue, one of the other things which has become a trend online is Islam bashing on the line, because ISIS uses as part of their name Islamic, and people are taking that to mean that all people who are Muslim support ISIS. How does that actually break down? The theory of what ISIS is versus the majority of people who are Muslim and follow Islam?
Well, the simple answer to that is just take a look at the facts on the ground. The vast majority of ISIS victims are other Muslims. In many respects, I have a blog, and I wrote a post on this talking about how in many ways what's going on with ISIS is a war within Islam. You're seeing both a war between Shia and Sunni Islam. This is an ideological as well as a physical conflict. But you're also seeing something of a struggle for the soul of Sunni Islam in the region as well. Let's not forget the Jordanian pilot who was burned alive by these individuals. It's striking to me that they behead Americans and everybody else. Gruesome, but quick and painless. They immolate this guy. You know, what is that telling you? That they hate their own heretics, what they see as heretics, far more, you know, even than they hate the infidels in some respects. So, you know, let's not forget that the vast number of people fleeing the violence and the vast majority of those killed in this struggle are other Muslims. You know, and I mean, he was certainly a deranged young man, but he tapped in to a right-wing, you know, hate movement in the United States. The young man who went into church in Charleston and killed African Americans. You know, the right-wing, racist hate movements in the U.S. ground themselves in a perversion of Christianity. You know, there is no religion. Even the so-called gentle Buddhists are quite capable of being violent against minorities in Burma. There isn't a religion on the planet incapable of being perverted by extremists in the service of violence.
Yeah, so talking about the people who are fleeing, Muslims who are fleeing that violence, the refugees that are going to countries all over, and every country now has a concern about who they're allowing into their country. Part of the discussion on the debates last night, the Democratic debates last night, all the Republican candidates talking about whether or not this estimated 10,000 Syrian refugees should be allowed into the United States. Now, what does this mean to this refugee movement? And should we have some concern about that? I mean, it does certainly seem logical that this might be a time to tighten up our borders a little bit.
Well, and it's what's really, there's no question that in fact, well, there's still a great deal of uncertainty, but the reports coming out of Paris is that one of the terrorists who was killed, they found a Syrian passport. It's not entirely clear whether it's a valid one, but he appears to have come through Greece. Now, that is going to create an enormous shockwave in Europe because there's already mounting opposition to these waves of immigrants. I saw it. I was actually doing some work in Bulgaria back in June, and they were already – that's the only country with a land border with Turkey in the European Union. And they were already incredibly frustrated about this pressure, and that was before all of this stuff. So I think you're going to see an even greater resistance among the European nations to take in refugees. As for us, the thing to keep in mind is there are two security threats. And to be honest, there is the small threat that you could infiltrate people, you know, into the United States, you know, as terrorists. And there, what I would do is you don't watch for the families. You watch for the unaccompanied young men in their 20s. And it may be worth saying, you know, this group we have to look at, you know, maybe we only let families in, you know, maybe we let, you know, women and children and things like that. And we worry about these unaccompanieds. But the evidence suggests is that people who get radicalized tend to be second generation. I mean, the young man from Bolingbrook is a classic case in point. People who suffer from something called double alienation. They don't fit into their parents' world. They have trouble integrating into the world of their adopted country. So, you know, a lot of preventing that is how we treat them when we arrive. But on the other hand, I'm not naive, and I'm not going to tell you there's absolutely no risk at all. I think it's a question of vetting. It's a question of caution. It's a question of taking a good hard look over which of the immigrants you let in.
Do we just completely shut it down? There's a good way of vetting it.
Yeah, you could do that. I think whether that's the message you want to send, you know, because, again, then you victimize the very people who are already being victimized, fleeing the violence. On the other hand, it creates, you know, it creates a security problem in the rest of the world too, because we're setting ourselves up as the leader of NATO, the leader of the coalition that wants to fight ISIS. And then we're saying, well, you know what, guess what, you guys deal with the refugee problem and so on. So it's complicated, and of course it doesn't help that it's an election year, because this now, of course, is, you know, is the hot topic. Yeah. And it's easy when you're not in office to take swipes. It's a lot harder to come up with really good policies when you have all the intelligence that the president has access to in terms of what's actually going on.
Yeah, Tom, thank you very much for joining us. Tom Mikaitis, professor of history, terrorism expert. Appreciate your expertise, Tom. We'll look forward to hearing you more.